next up on the agenda is a town hall style forum led by our distinguished director, David Gross, and I will turn the mic over.
So, hello to everybody. It's good to see. I mean, I see many people here I've seen many times. Just about every year. But it's great to see you all. And I got to listen to the last talk, which was great. But I missed the previous talks. We scheduled this thing after I'd already agreed to give a public lecture in Montreal, from which I came this morning. And I will tell you, I got up at 1:30 a.m. California time to make to get here in time for the end of this. And that was a great talk. But I missed the other three. And so we always, you know, and we usually do it in the middle, so we're doing it at the end because of my crazy schedule. But we have this town hall-ish meeting where we discuss issues of interest in science education, particularly in the schools, and with our speakers, and so whom I want to invite this up, come up front, including the organizer of both this conference and the program, Adam Burrows, who is somewhere here. So come on, Adam. And before we start, I just want to once again. Maybe Marty asked this when he let these off. How many of you are here for the first time? Well, that's good. That's always. But we still have a problem in reaching all of your colleagues. So I have a few weeks ago I was in Philadelphia giving another public lecture, and they. And this was at Drexel, and they had an open day that where they bust in. They had a lot of high school students come, about 700, with their some of them with their teachers, and they came up afterwards. And I was talking to one very enthusiastic high school class in physics somewhere in the Philadelphia area, I forget where, with a very enthusiastic teacher. So we were talking, and I said, you know about our KITP high school physics teachers conference that we hold every year? He said, no. So you know about our webpage, you know about our resources that we're now making through this prize and presentations to available to high school teachers? No. So well, we advertise in all your, I read that journal, you've never heard of it? No. And I gave him my card, and it was too late for him, I'm sure he's not here. Too late to apply to this one. But I was a bit shocked because, you know, this has been going on for about 10 years now, more. And we still don't reach teachers who would be very interested. He was very interested just in knowing about the site, the existence of these conferences, the fact that it was all on the web, the teachers' presentations. So every year we ask you the same question, how can we do better? And you give us advice and it doesn't work. Now, so I have a request to make, from all of you, you know, and that is, and in fact, so it's that you are the best people to inform your colleagues about this, about what we do here, about what exists on the web, and about the conferences, anybody else. And a lot of the people, so how many people in this room heard about this from someone else who was present at one of these conferences? Okay, so that proves my point. That's 2/3 people in the room. Some of you were here at the original conference and then spread the word. Now there is a phenomena that we're slightly aware of, is that some of you feel that, well, if you tell too many people about it, you can finish the sentence. But, but you know, for some reason, it seems to be impossible to communicate with high school teachers. We've proven that experimentally, and but you can do it, and you do it well, and there's nothing like personal testimony. And I really would like to urge you to do it. So I want to overcome your reluctance. There are still empty seats in this room, right? So don't worry. Please tell your colleagues. Please go out of your way to tell your colleagues. Okay? Not just about the conferences, but also about the resources on the web. Now, of course, we enjoy doing this. Jocelyn, who deserves a lot of thanks, right? And Dan Hone. And all of our speakers, and you know, all of us really enjoy doing this, partly because we know that, as I say every year, you guys are really fighting it out in the trenches, and we know how important it is for our kids, for future scientists, for the nation. Bum, bum, bum. It's really important, and we respect you, and we're happy to do this, and we enjoy your enthusiasm. And so it's a pleasure for us to do it. But we do like to get, feel that it's doing as much good as it can. And we'd like to amplify what's done here through what's on the web, for sure. And we're not getting through. And so you can help by pledging. We can have one of the five people. You certainly know five colleagues in your area. You run into them at these boring meetings. So when do you, all right? Tell them about it. Tell them where the website is. Tell them. Even tell them about the conference. Okay, that's enough preaching. These town hall meetings, we really open it up to you and to the panel of speakers. Previous years, we've discussed all sorts of problems. It's been very interesting for us and maybe between you all. Last year, there was a lot of discussion following the economic crisis. I shudder to think what you're going to tell us, how bad it is now. What am I interested in? Well, we're always interested in what more we could do with the kind of resources we have along the lines we have. We'll try to continue doing what we have been doing. I actually would be interested in whether you think there is some change going on with the new administration, which is putting a lot of federal money we hear into, and how whether that's affecting the kind of science education that you guys represent. So maybe we'll just briefly go through. I don't know whether anyone wants to say anything. Adam always wants to say anything. But I'll let the panel say whatever they want to say, and then we'll just have an open mics. And there are mics someplace. Somebody has a mic. Oh. So I'll try to go around and give it to people. Or we'll start with Declan.
No, it's okay.
No, I just thought it might be interesting for people to know that there's this big planning exercise going on in astronomy. I think maybe Alan mentioned it this morning. You're on it, so Alan's conflicted, but every 10 years the astronomy and astrophysics part of scientists in the U.S. get together and they make a big plan for what's going to be done in the next 10 years. To keep your ears open, Al can't tell us anything today, but I think by about the end of August, right?
September, I think.
Or September. So that's going to decide a lot of the future of this exoplanet field, too, hopefully in a positive manner. Right, Alan?
Expression of
The NRC is very careful about things public ahead of time, and you might say that the joke would be that, I could tell you, but I have to kill you afterwards. It turns out the NRC rules are that I have to kill you before I tell you.
Sorry, I guess I'm missing the point, though.
I think you all should ask questions.
Yeah, ask questions, please.
Well, you keep this there. Okay. Kevin.
I wanted to address what you said about the NRC. Maybe I have a different... NRC stand for Nuclear Regulatory Commission? A different one.
National Research Council.
It's part of the National Academy of Sciences. There's a National Research Council, which runs the decadal survey, which has been going underway for a year or two now. It's called Astro 210, which is a exercise being funded by NASA, NSF, and DOD to try to put together the plans for the next 10 years of how the federal government should spend its resources for both ground-based and space-based assets. So it's a big planning exercise. The planetary science folks are doing the same thing. They're a year or so behind the astronomy folks. And it's a very valuable exercise for people in Congress and OMB to look and see what these relatively neutral surveys predict should be done for the next 10 years. They use that for really controlling a lot of the federal spending for the next decade. It's a quite important process.
I was the one that rang the bell of doom last year about financing, and I said, show me the money for all the stimulus that was going to come, and I haven't seen any of the money come to me. Has anybody in this room seen any money come to support at the K-12, though? K-12 in the classroom, I haven't seen any. My district hasn't seen any, and as far, I'm not seeing any movement in my state. In fact, we came to within inches of losing our state science fair. My district laid off us 300 people last year.
Where?
I'm in Arizona. I'm in Scottsdale. We laid off 300 people yesterday. There'll be another 400 laid off. We're going for an emergency tax now, a 1% tax. And 450 teachers in my district have been given contracts with their name in red, which I thought was really nice. And what that means is if you got a red contract, if the tax does not pass on May 18th, which is a 1% sales tax, your contract is null and void for the next year. You are officially riffed. If it does pass, you have a job for the next year. So, and I know we had talked about all this talk about supporting math and science. Sorry. Has anybody in this room had something come out of?
Okay. We know that last year our district initially pink slipped multiple teachers, and partly because of that funding and partly because we took a voluntary pay cut, we were able to save a lot of them, including her job. So, which I'm saying, yeah. So, I don't know if people advertise to them, but our Federation of Teachers is really vocal about where we got our funding from, and some of that was from the stimulus money, but we're going through budget cuts again because we're still getting, the state of California is now getting a lot of cuts.
Here.
I was going to say that in the state of Michigan, the state legislature decided to take the money that was given to us for stimulus for teachers and save it and use it until next year, at least 30%. The rest was used to balance the rest of the general budget, which did not include teachers. And when they told Arnie Duncan this, he said, you can't do that. And they said, okay. And they did it anyway. And nobody's done anything. So, you know, we're battling. Right now, in the state of Michigan, there's a both the House and Senate's considering a bill that however many years you work, you get cut off at 30 years. So if you got 40 years experience, you only get paid for 30 years. Everybody's taking a 3% cut. Everybody's going to take an additional 3% to your pension fund. And they want us to pay 20% of our Cadillac health care, which we already pay a portion of it anyway. But they're going to add that to it because we are overpaid and underworked.
I was going to add to that. In New York State, our school itself is $6 million short, and that's going to obviously be cuts in teachers. But they say without the stimulus, it would be much worse. Next year is going to be worse than this year when the stimulus runs out. So as a district, we haven't necessarily seen the funds coming for programs, but it's been holding the water back, so to speak. Next year, it's going to be a real flood and drops unless there's another stimulus passed.
We could go on like this for quite a while. I could tell you about UC where we had 10% pay furloughs. I'm not sure what we can do about it. So I travel a lot around the world. It is kind of shocking. For example, I was at something we don't do much in the United States, but they do often in Asia, which are science festivals for young people. So I was at one in Singapore, which had 700 kids from high school, from Southeast Asia, Singapore, India, Cambodia, Vietnam, Malaysia. It was held at a high school in Singapore, which looked more beautiful than this campus, and had incredible teachers, science project. I mean, I felt like I was visiting a first world country from the third world. It was quite amazing. And they do that kind of science affairs, which bring the kids together. And it's hard to compare to the United States because we don't even compile numbers on such activities. So, it's clear that the country as a whole is going to suffer from this, what's happening both to our schools, but also to our universities. And we can just complain about it, but we have to somehow convince the same people who are giving money. I mean, the money is going into science. There was stimulus money for science. Those budgets are going up. But somehow, the idea that I have a feeling that behind all of this, there really is a feeling, well, we'll just import the brains we need. Hmm. We can destroy our educational system, even at the university level, and still import the brains we need.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot of teacher positions have been saved, but again, I don't know firsthand. LA, we're still hurting very badly. And I don't see any positive publicity about what teachers do in the media. So one thing is, if you ever have media exposure and you can tell them that, you know, there are teachers working really hard and putting up with a lot and doing good things, you hear very little about the positive aspect in the media, very little. I think the media should really hear it. If you can do anything, that's much appreciated. But I have a question. We talk about standards in teaching physics, and everybody says there must be standards, but nobody seems to agree on exactly what we must know. I wanted to ask the panel, any particular things that you think you'd like to see, other than the basic mechanics and electricity, that you'd like us to convey in quantum electrodynamics, or just the idea of science, or anything that you'd like us to emphasize you think is getting short shrift?
I think it's important to communicate enthusiasm, to actually indicate that a career in science is possible, what the general path might be, the core value of mathematics, because if you don't have the mathematics, you can go to college and then you discover, even though you might have enthusiasm, that you can't do it. And you all know this. But that message isn't always communicated in the modern culture. So it's enthusiasm in mathematics and that it's really possible. Another thing is that even though the number of women is going up, the fraction of women is going up, it's not going up fast. There are a lot of women that just don't see that as their future. And that should change. You have the problem multiplied manifold with minorities. And it would be nice to be able to make significant inroads into that. But in order to do that, you have to indicate to them that this is a real possible future. And so it's that broader aspect that I would emphasize. You can become enthusiastic in doing biology, in geology, physics. Some aspects of mathematics, of course, can lead to physics in a quite natural way. It doesn't make much difference, but that these things are possible, I think, is an important thing to communicate. I could continue, but maybe other.
Well, I would just say one thing that's very valuable for students coming into college is that they have some computer savviness in terms of doing science on the computer. So not just looking up Wikipedia, but actually, you know, doing some basic programming, understanding simulations, or being able to, you know, do calculations on a computer. Using Excel spreadsheets, even at that level, is something that's very useful for students to have coming into college. Because I think, you know, the growing wave is that a lot of our work is going to be very data intensive, so they should understand data, statistics, I heard over here. That stuff coming into college, it's important.
Yeah, I should defer to Jim and Deborah because they're teaching institutions. Carnegie is not a teaching institution, so by the time I meet someone, a young person in my role is about 30 years old on a postdoctoral fellowship, and by then they've passed, jumped a few hurdles and proven themselves, and they're pretty enthusiastic, so I'll let Jim and Deborah say more.
Well, I'll second your comment on it would be nice to see students coming in with more computer skills because I find that they're good at browsing the web and they can use Word and whatnot, but actually our undergrads don't know how to solve any kind of mathematical problems on the computer. They're just not taught that. But I also agree with what you said, Adam, that to me, standards are important. People have to learn things, but I'm more interested in getting good students, and what you have to do is interest people in science, and you know, then I think the standards will largely take care of themselves if you get good people coming in. But if you just focus too hard on the standards that everybody's got to get up and know this and that, and you know, take 3 weeks of standardized tests, I think that turns students off, and so they go and study law or medicine or you know something totally non-scientific.
It isn't science. So I would agree. I'm also very shocked that students who are so computer savvy actually don't know any don't have programming skills. I also find that students aren't connecting the ideas that they learn in mathematics with science, and so having some integration there. And then finally, commenting also on the standards, one of my dear friends has started a nonprofit organization where they're writing flex books. It's called CK12, and they're writing science textbooks for high school folks, kids. And the point is that schools can't afford to keep buying textbooks, and so they, by having these online textbooks, they can always get current information. And so I've helped her to write things, and what she'll say to me is, okay, we have to address this standard from Florida or this standard from California. And there's no cohesive, you know, essay. It's very choppy, so I don't know how you guys actually deal with that. I think that must be tough.
We're handcuffed with the standards, and that's what determines what our annual yearly progress is going to be, and that's what we're tested on, and that's what the juniors have to do. We have to give them certain subjects. You know, that it's like in physical science. You know, most of the PSAE, the Prairie State Achievement Exam that they take their junior year, is based on the standards that Illinois sets up. And if they don't pass those tests, and at least if 70% of the kids don't pass the test, then the state can come back on the school and give us all kinds of grief. Yeah, we're locked in. We have to do it until we get the politics to change. And that's about what it boils down to.
Our state is actually moving a little bit, Pennsylvania. A little bit of a different direction, going towards something called the Keystone exams. And as much issue as there is with the standards, our Keystone exams now are not going to include physics at all. And the standards still include it, but the students don't have to pass a Keystone exam with any physics involved. So the concern is, even though the standards include it, if it's not in any of the tests, there's an issue there also. And that is in the future. It's coming, but there's always the joke, well, your position's not going to be there anymore because it's not in the standards. And I hope it's a joke because, you know, I really like my job. But But my question is not even with those standards, but I find that students go into careers that they are, that they see every day. So I have students that go to the physical therapist, so they want to become a physical therapist, or they are going into teaching because they see teachers, or their dad's an engineer, their mom's an engineer, so they go into engineering in some specific field. They don't have a good opportunity to see scientists working on science. Is there a way that teachers can promote that a little bit better? I mean, so many students want to be, you know, science, you know, go into CSI because they see that on television. But is there some way that we as teachers can promote that more?
We need a drama with that.
Exactly. You know, there you go. Would you guys like to talk to, like, NBC or ABC?
We actually, so a few years ago, we have a journalist in residence program. One of our journalists in residence, who is actually now working on a National Academy project to try to connect to the media, had the producers of Big Bang Theory up here. I'm not sure that was, and we complained a lot about the way science is often depicted on television. And so they challenged us, you know. They said, "Wow, we sympathize with you, but you have to make something gripping and so on." I actually came up with an idea for them, but they wouldn't. I don't think it sold. It's not easy. I don't know how to do it. We have a program. You know, you should try to take. I mean, in your schools, if you try really care about that, you should try to connect with your local universities. Because by and large, universities feel they should be doing something, and sometimes they're being urged to do that by funding agencies. And there are things that can be done. We do some in Santa Barbara in the physics department. We do some here at the KATP by trying to get, we have difficulty connecting with the high school. Our problem is we can't find the recipients. We try to get our postdocs to go and give lectures, you know, little lectures, show and tell about what their research to high school science classes. And that we think is really successful because they're good role models. They're very close in age, only a few years older. And they exude enthusiasm, and they, you know, there's somebody, I could be here. That person in a few years. So, you know, partly this has to come from you. If you would just wait for your education boards to provide guidance, they'll just provide more standards. So do it yourselves. Go to your local university or college, and go to the physics department, make an appointment. Believe me, the chairman of the physics department, I think in any university we know, gets a request to have a meeting with a bunch of high school teachers in the vicinity. They would jump at it. And there are all sorts of things you might do. They could do open houses. Those are enormously successful. Kids love that. I saw that at Drexel, as I said, in Philadelphia. There were 700 kids. You go to that, Drexel, take care of kids?
On the other side
of the state, so. Pennsylvania, not Philadelphia. But anyway, this can be done, and I just urge you to reach out as well. There's probably more goodwill than you think in some of these places. National labs do this all the time if you're close enough to a national lab. It's a wonderful place. Kids really get turned on.
I have a question for the panel. You know, I in the last 2 years or so, I've seen reports from the National Academies and NSF about some of the ideas that they want to do in order to increase the flow of undergraduates and, you know, high school students becoming science majors. And one of the things that I've seen is that there's been an increase in funding for science education, especially out of NSF. And sometimes there's discussion about coupling funding that goes for science that has a trickle down to, you know, K-12 level. Have you guys seen that? And has it changed the way that you guys are putting together grants in order to get some of the cutting edge science down in forms like this in regards to professional development for teachers?
I think the answer is yes. If you get an NSF grant, you have to have a
couple of there are a bunch here.
NASA is also very good at pushing public outreach. So I think both, you know, both NASA and NSF are doing a lot to try to get the word out. But you know, it doesn't necessarily mean it's succeeding.
My experience is they urge you to do outreach. They give you no guidance. They provide no examples of things that work. Do they tell you how to do it? You're supposed to invent that yourself. I mean, I regard it as totally crazy. They have no idea. The people who are pushing this are usually people who are program directors or, you know, or managing a certain scientific program and know nothing about education themselves. I think it's a total meaningless exercise.
So I would say that the National Science Foundation, as James said, is making this a priority by requiring that research grants have significant outreach programs, not just I took a couple kids to a telescope one day, right? So and I agree that the NSF specifically doesn't provide guidance, although there are advisors with the NSF that you can talk to, and they're coordinators, and they work with them, and they actually come up with very good ideas. But this is one of the examples where, seeing how scientists work, this is a great NSF outreach project, is getting a group of teachers together and coming up with an outreach activity that gets kids with scientists and scientists with kids. And these are exactly the kind of ideas that we as scientists are looking for to fulfill our NSF grants, and also applying just for education grants. We don't have to have that tacked on to research grant. You could have your own NSF education grant irrespective of the research. But you know, it's if you have that concept that you want to get scientists and kids together, that's a great idea, and I'm sure you can find a scientist who is going to say yes, let's put a proposal and get some funding.
I teach urban kids, and I get them doing research over the summer through American Chemical Society's Project Seed. And they get paid, and they get to work as part of a team, and they get to start picturing themselves as scientists. And it would be nice if our physics community had something like that. It's just an amazing experience.
Where do they work?
They work in labs, usually at Rutgers, occasionally at Princeton, sometimes in a private. I've had students do it in private organization, but they work in any variety of labs. And they present to the American Chemical Society meeting in September, so they get the experience of presenting a poster, talking to judges, and I think when they come out of that experience, they feel more like it's possible for them to go into science.
Sure.
The money comes from the American Chemical Society and sometimes within the university.
There's a similar program on this campus for about 200 high school students every summer across the campus, actually, in the sciences and engineering. Yeah. So there are lots of, I mean, I'm sure there are other examples. The people over here were.
There are two programs that I know of. One is QuarkNet. Mm-hmm. They have institutes for teachers, and then they give the teachers cosmic ray detectors to take back to the classroom.
Uh-huh.
And also speakers will come to your classroom. And that's not taken, I don't know, seriously around Los Angeles very much. And then in Los Angeles, At UCLA, they have a plasma lab for high school students. And we've had, we presented two papers at, or posters at an APS meeting. And it's all voluntary. And one of the professors there, Walter Geckelman, he sponsors the whole thing. And he brings the students in, and they stay.
Yeah, I think we could go through, I think there are a lot of such programs around the country and different. Yeah. Question is, you know, we don't have too much time. How we? I do think you know, as was said here, the NSF, the government. Maybe it isn't. I don't think it's doing it very well, but it is. It is trying to address the problem by forcing people who get grants to spend some portion of their money on outreach, without defining it. So I think it's. It can be often pro forma and wasteful. But you do have this audience out there, as was remarked, of scientists at universities everywhere who would be very interested in a good idea if you have one and would be very approachable. So I do urge you not just to go and see what's out there already, but to try to create something new.
How many of you have a research experience in undergraduate program? How many of you have a research experience in teacher program? How many of them have a research experience for undergraduates at their college? All of them do. How many have a research experience for teachers at their program? None of them do. I have participated in three of them at the National Solar Observatory, Notre Dame University of Michigan. Michigan doesn't do it anymore, but Notre Dame still does, and several other places. And this is a really fundamental way.
I used to be in Arizona, and we didn't have a program there. I knew the principal. I don't know whether they.
I don't think so.
My institution, actually, our headquarters, does run summer schools for teachers around the country as well as in D.C. high schools. My department doesn't, but our institution does. It's just downtown rather than
quick.
I should have raised my hand.
Yeah. Okay, Mike is here.
Okay. If I can bring one positive possible program to do, you mentioned computer programming. BASIC was taught, you know, in the 80s, and that was that. However, there's been real improvements in software, and schools aren't teaching it. I mean, first you have small BASIC, seven commands. That can reach 10-year-olds, and they love it. Also, in high school, you actually could start teaching in summer programs, 2- and 4-week programs, MATLAB, LabVIEW. These are fun to use. Those are fairly easy programs to sell to kids, especially if they're on a college campus. I'm thinking like things programmed similar to the Michigan's the Math and Science Scholars Program, which is moderate cost because there is an audience here. And I'm not talking this room, but outside this room. It's not when I go to a university, it's all Title I money. They high-end schools don't even know what's going on. But the Michigan program is somewhat private. In other words, they're trying to raise funds. And so they offer it to everybody and publicize it for everybody. You've got a lot of wealthy parents out there that love to send their kids to MATLAB training, hoping that somehow they can get a, as a junior, they can do an internship during the summer, so they take MATLAB as a sophomore. In other words, there are ways of driving the computer science thing at moderate cost. I mean, we're not talking, you can use one of your computer labs during the summer that's not in use. I'm trying to say be positive.
I have a 20-year-old daughter whom I've been Facebook friends with now for 5 years with her friends, and I've been astonished at how effective a tool it is for giving them kind of a background knowledge of what someone else does. And I think with your grants, you could very effectively communicate a lot of science, and just the idea that someone maybe of minority status, who's a postdoc, who's really cool, who came to my high school and did this really enthusiastic presentation. Hey, they're on Facebook. They want to be my friend. And it's somehow established that they're also a good person through the university. You know, they're not a creep. So this is established. They're a good person. They're good with kids. And and everything's appropriate. They do. Somebody's monitoring the site, so it's all appropriate. But then, like on my, I have a Moodle webpage with my junior high students, and I'm just so thrilled at the science they bring. They bring all kinds of links that they find on the web. They are absolutely craving to have an intellectual discourse and a forum for intellectual discourse, which they don't have available at the school in person with each other because they're so, you know, shy and embarrassed and we can't talk about academics. But as soon as they get on the web, there is an opportunity for them to exist as intellectual beings. And if you had a, you know, a cool postdoc person who, you know, oh my gosh, look, I could be like them, and then that person's posting, oh, today I went to the lab and I did this, or, you know, doing this today, listen to my rock music and, you know, counting stars or whatever they're doing. I think that the students would gain an appreciation for, hey, I could do that too, and they could email questions. And so reaching the kids where they're at already on MySpace, Facebook, those sort of things might be helpful.
Great idea.
Yeah, I have a thought just regarding, you know, in-reach and outreach. I think that, you know, also, you know, besides the high schools, the community colleges are a very fertile, you know, target. And with the economic downturn where money is scarce, perhaps there's an opportunity to, you know, capture more interest in students for pursuit of a higher education because they don't look at, you know, the broad spectrum. They're trying to see what they can afford. So many capable students could be caught in sort of zugzwing between the community colleges and the high schools trying to find a way to get started. So my thing is if we could get, you know, some of the teacher colleges, maybe you guys could make a little bit of a bridge with the teacher colleges in science, get some students, post, not necessarily postdocs, but even just seniors in college to, as part of their, they may have a senior lab requirement, well, have there be a senior communications of science project, have them go into the high schools, have them go into the community colleges where there's almost the same age as the students, and inspire them to consider something beyond just a short-term career goal. And because right now, people are just looking for their first job, and they don't, their goals are set too short. So I'm thinking that there's a lot of resources that we have in the colleges that don't have to be really high up there that could be utilized and just, you know, sort of interspersed.
I have a question and a comment. Do any of your universities, University of California included, have ever they done an economic impact study on the effects of the University of California and Cal State system or your university system on the local economy and how much money is injected into the local economy based upon the research and the things that you do at your university? I think that's a good argument to be made because, and then my comment is I think we are a much larger group than they are, okay? And we need to be our own advocates. I mean, and that's an argument that we need to make, is, you know, we're sort of cutting our nose off to spite our face if we're saying we're gonna cut this research. But, you know, I used to live in the Bay Area. You know, I mean, look at the money generated from the industry that comes out of Stanford and the University of California research, scientific specifically. And I grew up in the 60s, so I remember Sputnik and, I mean, we have to make that, we have to make that argument.
The argument is made, you should definitely make it. But university administrations and advocates make this argument all the time. And it is probably true that the industrial powers, okay, in a state like California understand that. But not enough, nor do the citizens understand long-term gains versus short-term avoidance of taxes. So people, you know, we're in a country which is pretty good at not looking very far ahead. And it will suffer. As I said before, I have a feeling that, you know, this is not going to be stopped because the people who really need the highly skilled employees of the future are getting more and more used to shipping the stuff they need to do overseas. They're international companies, or bringing people here. In our research universities now, which are now being threatened, not just the public ones, not just UC, but all across the country, we've been doing that for years. So, you know, I was at Princeton for many years. Half the graduate students at Princeton are from overseas. That's because they're not enough. Now, Princeton gets very, you know, probably top few percent of the students that go into physics. The United States doesn't produce enough of them as a country of 300 million. So we've been used to that for the last 20 years. Silicon Valley is used to bringing over Indians and Chinese. Those countries are educating more and more people. There are more engineers produced in China than in the United States. And when you go there, you see how it increased. You know, when they say China's growing at 10% a year, last year was a bad year, it was only 8%. You know, when you go there, 10% accumulated over a few years adds up to quite a lot of percent. And you notice it every time you go. And sooner or later, we're all going to, this country as a whole, are going to suffer. And the people you're not educating because of all the reasons we've discussed will be replaced, either over there or brought over here. And that's why I think nothing is really being done about it, because the people who know it's going to happen think they're must have figured out that there are other ways to solve the problem, maybe cheaper or cheaper politically, and most of the people don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I have to share a success story so I'm not the doom and gloom harbinger. Okay, I completely agree that my students need to interact with scientists. And you know, I don't have the funds for it, I don't have this, but I did a small thing this year, and it ended up being a very big thing. I require my students participate in ICEF, the International Science and Engineering Fair, and all the rules are on the website, and they pore over the website, and they don't read half the rules, right? So I figured they wouldn't read all the rules, so I added a long-term research paper on. Yeah, it wasn't on there, but they thought it was. So, and then I laid out some requirements, and the requirements I required for research, I required they interview two scientists in their field, face-to-face or on the phone, and they provide me with documentation on that. And then I required that they establish some form of electronic communication. They had to have at least 3 exchanges with 2 others. And what I got were students that wrote to Harvard, Yale, MIT, and we got some of the most incredible email responses from researchers. One of my students, who was actually looking at the effectiveness of cleaning in various convenience stores, okay, she was comparing it with the demographics of the area, had a Harvard professor that was so interested that every night she would take photos of all her Petri dishes, she would then send it across, and he would then identify with her, and they would have this wonderful discussion. So they established relationships. The result was I took 32 kids to ICEF and we got 32 medals. It was a clean sweep. This was in Arizona. We just finished in Arizona. This is the state, right? This is the state. And it really was, but it was these kids, they were so excited. And they were, you know, they were calling their mentors during when they got the medal. Oh, I've got a call. They knew the scientists, and that's much more, I think, effective. I have people come in my classroom. And quite honestly, I've had a nuclear engineer come in, never again, because it was like, oh God, I'll never do that. Because he came in and he, whoa, you know, the board there, and they went, oh my God. Because it doesn't make you a good presenter if you're a scientist. Okay, unfortunately, they're not always paired. But just that little tiny thing by saying, okay, and if you did this, if you said by the end of the semester, I expect to see that you have exchanged at least 2 emails, and I let them choose whatever field, but I want to see those emails. And you know, they really—it was a little tiny step, and it didn't require any money. And I don't know why I didn't do it before, because I'm so tired of research being cut and paste off the web, blah blah blah. Who did the web page? Who knows? Totally unreliable. Wikipedia, sorry. Whatever's on there, you know, but it was just this personal touch. So this morning when I got up early morning, which is why I'm so exhausted, I had 5 emails from the different parents saying, what we want to do now is to set up a conference call with all these people that have been involved, and we've got, I don't know how many universities now, and we want to have this massive celebration with all the kids so they can meet, they can actually see what their mentor looks like. But it was, again, it was a little tiny step. And we found that people answered emails. Yay for you guys in the university level. So, a little success story.
Do you guys, by the way, have any, I mean, this is a wonderful idea, right? Do you have any way in which you, aside from this kind of meeting or with your immediate colleagues, any way of telling many high school teachers around the country about this kind of idea?
I'm an educator ambassador. So I do like
1850. So I'm an NASA educator ambassador. I am living off the DOLA part of NASA, so I travel all over the country. But I find if you tell a bunch of teachers, we like to talk, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're the absolute best network. So we it goes pretty quickly, you know. I sat at a conference and I actually thought, oh, that slide looks familiar. Oh, that slide looks familiar. And I went, oh, that's my slide. So I thought, oh, it's made it all the way across the country. But yeah, there are national blogs and things like that. Unfortunately, as teachers, we are a little bit too busy to be doing blogs, and you know, unlike my students. But but things like Science Fair, the Science Fair pages, there's a recommendation of things, and that went on to the Arizona, the ASF page, that they established that. But you know, it's rather like the elephant in the room for those of us. I didn't grow up with technology. So for me, research is still books, and I stepped back and I went, wait a minute, they're always texting. Why aren't they texting to a scientist? You know, and you know, it's, or Facebook. NASA now has all these Facebook pages. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that kind of thing. So blogs and Facebook for students, yeah.
Right here.
Yeah, so far we've been talking a lot about like how we can get our kids to grow up to be rocket scientists and engineers and all that stuff. And we all know the truth. Not everybody grows up to be a rocket scientist, okay? I don't expect all of my students to become scientists. What I think is an even more urgent and more important issue in science education right now that we are severely lacking in is common understanding of science for the general public. Like when the people on TV talk about global warming or H1N1 or, you know, cutting NASA's funding, because what have they done for us lately other than Velcro and Tang? I mean, like, seriously, you know, the average person who votes, you know, who talks, who isn't, like, we're in charge of our country, supposedly, you know, the general population is dumber than anything when it comes to basic literacy in science. You know, while we're so busy trying to, you know, we have all these standards that we have to teach to, and we're making our kids memorize equations and be able to regurgitate stuff and do some really complicated lab in chemistry that they'll never ever do ever again. What are we teaching them that's actually going to be useful to them as informed, intelligent citizens of our country? Because right now, I've talked to a lot of really dumb adults out there. I can't tell you how many people my parents' age, you know, they have no clue what, you know, they'll just take whatever the news people or the pundits or their coworkers or anyone else has to say. And I think this issue of generally educating everybody on basic understanding of science is way more important than, oh my God, we need 20 more astrophysicists and we need such and such more of this. So.
To use the cliche out of the mouth of babes, I had an intellectual conversation with one of my smart 10th grade students. Our smarter students are not dumb. And they realize that what No Child Left Behind has done to them is that no child gets ahead. And that's exactly what he said. No child, it doesn't mean no child gets left behind. It means that no child gets ahead. Going back to what you said, that we're going to have to import our scientists because science in the K-12 level has been cut. It started whenever Eisenhower funds started getting cut out and used for mathematics instead of used for science. And I know in Arkansas now, most of the emphasis is on literacy and math. And I try to tell my science students that those are tools for science. They're important, but what are you going to do with those you're going to use them for science. And so that's where I try to lead my kids.
This is something you scientists can do. If you recall, during the early space races, those that reported the news anchors, were very much interested in the space race, and they knew a tremendous amount about it as a result. What I've seen on the news lately, however, is whenever there is anything, any announcement or any information that's needed to be conveyed about science, many of them will read whatever it is off the paper and just toss their head and laugh and say, well, I don't really understand it. And they let it go with that. That's embarrassing. If that same anchor couldn't figure out where Iran or Iraq was, it would be devastating to them. But it's not devastating to these news anchors that they don't understand even the most basic concepts of science to be able to explain. They're not embarrassed. But the audience would care.
What I'd like to share is that one of the things that was mentioned is in some of the countries around the world, how science has moved up and education has moved up, and in the United States it has moved, well, it's not moving. What I'd like to share is what I found to be true in the district where I'm presently teaching, and possibly in some of yours, and that is that the focus is not on education. It's on the band and sports and the teams. And that's where the money goes. And that's what is the total morning announcements, not on anything other, you know, than those things I shared with you. And so what I believe is we need a whole new focus on what's important and what isn't. And a lot of the focus that some parents have is my Johnny going to get his, or my Mary going to get her picture in the newspaper catching this ball, or, you know, hitting this ball, or swimming that race, or the other visible things.
Okay. This could go on, but I found it absolutely fascinating, and I think we recorded all this. So you can go back and listen. Let me just end with the panel and see if there's anything anybody else wants to add.
Well, there were some really good ideas that came out today about interacting with scientists and high school students and high school teachers. I want to know if there's anything as researchers that we can provide to better bring that research to the classroom. You know, our metric of output is the research paper, but that's not something that we would probably read to a high school student. Is there anything that we can do to make that research more accessible? So the question was, do we have web pages and do we do our own web pages? And yeah, we have web pages, but we almost always just set them up ourselves, or a grad student does it. We can't afford to.
Say, you know, the easiest thing for you, because it's difficult, you know, number one, you know, you're, you know, 350 miles away from me, others are even much farther away from me. But when I go on a web page, and I do that, I do it a lot at home, I don't do too much at school because we're too busy, and look around, you know, there's a great information, but it's a great information that I understand some of it at my level. And it would be nice to be able to go there and tell my students, you know, hey, section for high school students on what current research is in this. If you're interested, go here as maybe part of the report or part of, you know, our curriculum. And just to do, you know, for professors to do that, and again, provide the opportunity for students to understand, I think would be a great thing.
Another suggestion?
I don't know how realistic this is, and it may be already out there, but from something like this today, PowerPoint slides, maybe not the whole presentation, because that's your own.
Well, as
word.
You know, we have this. The,
right,
we
I've
have three
that,
presentations. We hope will.
Right, on your research that is not for other sciences, but perhaps for students, that the teachers can pick and choose which one. I mean, not just for things like this, but I don't know how.
So the Division of Planetary Sciences for the AAAS has produced a series of sort of, you know, big discovery PowerPoint slides for various, and I don't know how many topics they have now. I think maybe 3 or 4 or 5 or something like that. But the DPS does have something like that. But I think what you're asking is for us to produce it individually. That's a good suggestion.
We were talking earlier about the lack of or the downfall of communication, you know, and being able to communicate science to a layman's audience that doesn't understand physics or knows who Newton is, except he made a cookie with figs or something. But maybe, and go ahead and shoot me if you want, but an exercise for graduate students to learn to communicate with laymen their topic that they're actually working on. They make the web page. Not that you guys do. You guys have already earned your stripes and all of that other stuff, but maybe the first-year grad students, that gets to become their project, is how to explain what the research is in terms that people can understand before they actually go into the nitty-gritty, the details.
They don't understand it yet.
Okay. All right, third years.
But I would think
but
that
that's
even,
a good way to, for them yeah. to learn.
But I would think that you could do that with the undergraduates as well that may be working with you, and they may be more coupled and maybe even more enthusiastic.
Over here.
We talked a little bit before about students not getting to college knowing about how to use spreadsheets and computers for doing mathematical analysis. It would be helpful if, as researchers, you would post some data that students might analyze, you know, and look for something. You know, it would be ideal if it were something significant. They could say, oh, there's a brown dwarf there. We could see the evidence ourselves. So posting some data would be useful.
Well, there's a lot of data out there. I think what you need to do is post pointers to the data, how to access it.
The last couple of years, I've been working on a couple of different projects. And this past summer, I was doing a research experience for teachers through Argonne National Labs, just outside of Chicago. Through the Academy's Creating Teachers of Science, they hired me to do some research. And so I worked for the summer with a researcher in the Dark Energy Survey. Basically, he wants me to start teaching my students how to make observations in astronomy, and we are doing some supernova studies that my students are doing. And what we're doing is not too terribly difficult to do in terms of the techniques that they need. But my students are amassing their own data, and they are then sharing it with the newspapers. We actually had a newspaper reporter in and spent about 3 hours with my students one day after school when I was homesick. The kids hosted the newspaper reporter and gave her the story. It was because the kids got excited about it, and they are doing that. They're putting out data, and they're getting pieces of information from other people to build all of this in. One of the things that I'm trying to get my students to do now next is to start putting together a web page for what we're doing so that they can host it and so that our scientists who are actually using our data to build some other things so that they can interact easily and be able to move those things back and forth. And giving my students the chance to do even a menial task in the research process has just really enthused them.
So I'll just make one quick comment, which is that I get a lot of emails from students who say, my teacher assigned me to do an interview with a scientist, and here are 15 questions, and I need it by tomorrow morning. and you know, it's actually, we're all, I'm totally saturated. I work 7 days a week, really long hours. I never, ever say no when it comes to talk to the teachers, because I know that there'll be this cascading effect. So I love doing this, and maybe other people feel this way as well. But sending the students directly to me at the high school level is actually hard. I've got students at the university that I have to teach, and postdoctoral fellows, and projects to supervise, and proposals to write, and it just goes on and on. But teachers, no, I will always, you know. So I'd love, you know, to get organized and figure out a way that, you know, bring you to do research, or, you know, at that level. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, I get these solicitations from students as well, and they usually are interested in something immediate. One of the frustrations for me has been that I don't hear back. I've gotten a lot of these things. They've gotten they've fulfilled their assignment. I wrote out a lot of stuff, and then it goes into the void. It would be nice to maintain a relationship. What I would like to be able to do is to actually
have
students come into my office and to be given an opportunity to talk about what I'm doing, mm-hmm. And to answer questions back and forth immediately and not merely via email. And so and that is easily done for very little money, travel money maybe, but I certainly would be more than happy to do this.
Yeah, I have a suggestion, because I think this is one of the more inspirational gatherings I've been at, and the thing is, you have it all here right now. You've already done it. If you just take what you have right here, do a little bit of editing, put it on YouTube, take that YouTube, you send that link to every congressman and every person you think is worth influencing positively about education.
You mean this conversation we've been having for the last hour?
You can edit it as you see fit.
Well, it's all up on the web, and any one of you probably knows how better than we do how to connect it to YouTube. So go ahead and do it. You know, all you have to do is you create a little YouTube thing and put an arrow to our website.
It came from the university to
Nah.
Can I have to say one thing, sorry. Now, to clarify what I have my students do,
they had to specifically find an individual. They had to look into their research. They didn't write, I got 15 questions. It was specifically, I mean, I had one student, yeah, very, very, very narrow questions. They had to be approved ahead of time. They sent two, along with, I have done the following. I am looking into the effects of this particular chemical on this. I know that you did this. And really, it was an introduction, and it didn't begin, I'm doing this for class. I said, don't do that. They'll close it. And really, but they specifically chose the person. I hate those, I agree. Those blanket, this isn't to replace them doing research. This is after they've done their research. Now find someone who has a similar interest that you have, so that you can then jump off from there. And I think that's why it was really successful, because I was really, really strict on that. And I wanted to see a give and take, a give and take, a give and take. It was not a one shot. It had to be a series, and the questions had to feed off each other. And each time when they wrote back, they had to respond to what had been written to them, and then ask for further clarification or their ideas. So it does take some doing. I mean, it does. You can't just cut them loose and say, go gather emails, you know. Sorry, I don't want to give that impression. But they have to do the real work of knowing the person they're writing to beforehand, so. They're still writing. They don't write thank you notes. They're communicating. I mean, that night, they were texting as they were sitting in the exhibit hall, and yeah. So it isn't, and no, I'm not going to have them do a thank you note, because it's a relationship. It isn't a thank you for answering my question. It's, we've now established something that we're communicating with.
So I would say that those steps are important for this to be a success, that when we do get emails, random emails from students, I don't answer all of them, just because of time.
Okay, the staff is beginning to get antsy. And you all have had a long day. I think I've had the longest day. But thank you all. I'm sure I'll see some of you next year. Well, thank you very much for doing this.
Of course, of course.
Good. Yes, well, I'm glad we got a chance to meet you.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. You know, I love talking to science teachers.
Yeah, that's